Chapter 8. A Few Examples of Jewish Atrocities. Throughout their history, the Jews have committed millions of atrocities, most of which will never be recorded, and most of which are intentionally covered up and lost to history. Not only have they committed millions of atrocities throughout their history, flagrantly and constantly, but they are perpetrating atrocities today, in Russia, in China, in Cuba, in Hungary, and in Germany, both East and West. In fact, they are committing atrocities today in every country of the world, including these, our United States. Therefore, to list a few paltry examples does not do the subject justice. However, since so many people are so completely unfamiliar with the nature of these atrocities, I believe that reciting a few examples of Jewish atrocities will at least partially serve to shed some light on the fierceness of the Jewish nature, the vast immensity of that satanic program, and the diabolical cruelty perpetrated by the Jews upon the host nations amongst whom they have lived and grown fat. The Jewish religion itself is based on hatred, deception, and the destruction of all other nations. In the Old Testament, starting with Deuteronomy 20:10, we find the policy of deceit and destruction spelled out by the Jewish scriptwriters. When thou comest nigh unto a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it, and it shall be, if it make thee answer of peace, and open unto thee, then it shall be, that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve thee. And if it will make no peace with thee, but will make war against thee, then thou shalt besiege it. And when the Lord thy God hath delivered it unto thine hands, thou shalt smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword. But the women, and the little ones, and the cattle, and all that is in the city, even all the spoil thereof, shalt thou take unto thyself, and thou shalt eat the spoil of thine enemies, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. But of the cities of these people, which the Lord thy God doth give thee for an inheritance, thou shalt save alive nothing that breatheth. There we have the crux of the Jewish religion which we, the white people, have foolishly been partners in worship, by cunning, by treachery, by deceit. The Jews claim they have an inherent God-given right to destroy, kill, and obliterate all other peoples and nations that they may choose to victimize. After all, the Lord commanded it. At least so the Jewish scriptwriters say. And hundreds of millions of white Gentiles have been stupid enough and gullible enough to support them in this philosophy. The stupidity, the gullibility, and the cooperation of the Gentiles as a whole, and the white Gentiles in particular in this respect, has been, and is today, a key factor in the Jews' ability to divide, conquer and destroy vast numbers of their enemies, far in excess of their own numbers. The Jews' diabolical cunning in being able to pervert the minds of their victims, so that the victims themselves will help in their own destruction, is a paramount factor in the Jewish program of world conquest and world destruction. The old saying that whom the gods would destroy, they first made mad, should really read, whom the Jews would destroy, they first proceed to unhinge their minds, to the point where their victims will then help to destroy themselves. Let us now look at a few examples of Jewish atrocities in action. Let us also remember the Jewish axiom to always kill the best, thereby forever destroying any leadership that a people or nation might have, or might develop in future. The murder of Dresden. Before World War II, the city of Dresden was one of the most beautiful in the world. In fact, the word Dresden was synonymous with culture, beauty, and art. Like so many other cities in Germany, this city in particular was rich in German culture and the heritage of its people. The castle, the opera, the Hofkirche, the Frauenkirche, to name a few amongst thousands of other buildings, were beautiful and outstanding examples of German and white culture. Many of these beautiful buildings dated back 1,000 years or more. The normal population of Dresden was about 600,000. In February of 1945, as the refugees from the eastern countries were fleeing before the Red Army and seeking safety in the West, a large number of them fled to the apparent safety of Dresden and swelled the population of that city to over 1,200,000 people. These were people who had fought the communists and were strongly anti-communist. We must remember that at this period of history, World War II was practically over, and Dresden was by no stretch of the imagination a military objective. In judging what follows, we must also keep in mind that Dresden represented the finest examples of German art and culture, that it was not a military objective, and that it was swollen at this time with refugees fleeing before the Red Army, the barbarians of the East. On the night of February the 13th, 1945, at 10:13 p.m., British bombers started dropping hundreds of thousands of firebombs on the poor, helpless refugees and citizens of Dresden, who were only trying to escape the butchery of the Red Army. These raids were carefully planned by these heinous and diabolical Jews to reap the maximum in death and destruction. The timing was such that it would hit the citizens of Dresden at a time when they were out on the streets celebrating a Christian religious holiday. Thousands were burnt alive. When the first raid was over, and the survivors came out of their shelters to begin rescue operations, and when thousands of firefighters arrived from other cities to help in the rescue, the treacherous Jews struck again. At 1:30 a.m., February the 14th, only 3 hours after the first attack, a second and larger force of British bombers rained down more death and destruction on the helpless white men, women, and children below. So many firebombs had been concentrated on this once beautiful old city of Dresden that a firestorm of hurricane proportions engulfed the whole city. The heat was so intense that once live people were shriveled into corpses reduced to half their size. Thousands of people hiding in air raid shelters were melted into one pool of liquid. A mother with her baby in her arms was found melted into the pavement, forming a small tar statue. In a furious, fiendish effort to incinerate this beautiful city of Dresden, the city of art and culture, more than 650,000 firebombs were dropped on it during the raids. As if this were not enough, the next day, which was Ash Wednesday, while Dresden was still burning furiously from the two attacks of the night before, a huge force of American B-17s started pounding on what was left of the magnificent city. The great shame and tragedy of it all was that the pilots who were dropping these bombs were white Gentiles killing their own brothers in a battle that the Germans had been fighting for the preservation of the white race. What these white pilots, with their mentality deranged by Jewish brain pollution, did not know, but their Jewish bosses did, was the fact that 26,260 Allied prisoners of war were in this same area. Just another example of Jewish evilness and treachery. Even though the American and British soldiers were fighting to save these Jewish parasites from their just dues, the Jews themselves didn't mind at all having the white prisoners killed as well. But this was still not the end of Jewish fiendishness and barbarity. A final touch of Jewish treachery was added when, after the B-70s had left, 37 B-51 American fighters were ordered to fly low over the city and kill anything that moved. This they did by shooting and machine-gunning people trying to escape along the roads out of Dresden, or people who were trying to save themselves along the banks of the River Elbe. These B-51 fighters flew low along the banks of the river and killed everything in sight. Does this sound familiar? Remember the vicious ideology of Jews as laid out in Deuteronomy 20:16. Thou shalt save alive nothing that breatheth. Let us remember that this is the vicious Jewish religion, a religion that they have been practicing for thousands of years, a religion that they have swindled the white man into as making it part of his own in order to worship, idolize, and protect the Jew. After the war, the world was lied to and told that only 35,000 people were killed during the raids. But as the years passed, they finally admitted to 135,000 deaths. This still was a big lie. The actual number of people killed between February the 13th and 14th was between 350,000 to 400,000. To add a further insult to treachery, when the war was over, the Jews invented a huge hoax accusing the Germans of killing and incinerating 6 million Jews in order to heap hatred on the Germans and create sympathy for the treacherous Jew who had started the war in the first place. In order to try to substantiate this colossal hoax, the Jews showed photograph after photograph of heaps of burned corpses. But the corpses they were showing were not Jews at all, but Germans that had been burnt in the once beautiful city of Dresden. We white brothers and sisters have a tremendously powerful lesson to learn from this horrible event. The overwhelming lesson is that the Jews regard all white people as their enemies, and that it is only a matter of time when they will try to incinerate the cities and people of America, just as they did Dresden, provided we will let them do it. The second lesson that we can learn is that it took the willing cooperation of white pilots, the British Air Force, and the American Air Force to do this treacherous deed, the killing of their own white brothers. This illustrates again and again how powerful is propaganda. The third lesson that we must learn is that there is no compromising, no negotiating, and no coexistence with the treacherous and diabolical Jew. Their religion and their inbred parasitic nature drives them on to destroy all that is good in this world. There is no peace, no coexistence with this vicious evil. It is either them or it is us. Being a member of the great white race, I would rather we survive than this evil parasite. As I have said before, the Jews have committed millions of atrocities throughout their history, and these atrocities are continuing into an ever-increasing crescendo today. It is not my purpose to recapitulate them all here by any means, since this would take a whole encyclopedia. I am only going to mention briefly a few more, since I do not want to take the space. The Red Terror in Russia. In 1917, the Russian Revolution broke out and overthrew the Tsarist government. This was done by a hardcore of Jewish terrorists, trained by the Jew Leon Trotsky in New York's East Side. In large part, it was financed by Jacob Schiff, a Jewish multimillionaire at the head of the Wall Street banking firm of Kern, Lieb & Co. Among other Jews, he contributed $20 million towards the success of the Russian Revolution. On August the 30th, 1918, the Jew Yuritsky, who was then head of the Cheka, the Jewish secret police in Russia, was assassinated and Lenin was wounded. The Bolsheviks used this as an excuse for instituting the Red Terror, which began the following day, and which in a sense has continued for more than 50 years. The entire membership of the Communist Party, which in 1918 numbered perhaps no more than 100,000, was turned into a Jewish instrument of murder. Its purpose was twofold: to inspire dread and horror among the Russian masses, and to exterminate the middle and upper classes, namely the best of the leadership. This leadership formerly consisted almost entirely of the white Russians. Men and women were executed or imprisoned not because of any offense, but simply because they belonged to what the Jews considered as potential leadership class. This category came to include just about every merchant, professional person, and landowner. The Jews not only murdered these upper and middle class white productive citizens, but members of their families were murdered as well. Little time was wasted in sifting evidence and classifying people as they rounded them up in nightly raids. The prisoners were generally hustled to the old police station not far from the Winter Palace. Here, with or without perfunctory interrogation, they were stood up against the courtyard wall and shot. The staccato sounds of death were muffled by the roar of truck motors kept going for the purpose. This was the Red Terror in action. This kind of terror was going on throughout the cities of Russia. Soon every factory, every government bureau, every school district, and every army unit would function under the... This kind of terror was going on throughout the cities of Russia. Soon every factory, every government bureau, every school district, and every army unit would function under the gimlet eye of a Jewish commissar. Soon the blood of human beings would be oozing from under the doors of communist execution chambers as tens of thousands of white men and women were butchered like cattle in a slaughterhouse. Soon 5 million landowners were deliberately starved to death as part of a premeditated plan. I might add that one of my earliest childhood recollections is when I personally lived through the famine in Russia in 1922. The Jews moved rapidly to exterminate the Gentile leader class of the entire nation by murdering every white factory owner, lawyer, and government leader, army officer, and every other person who had been or might be a potential leader. Every church and cathedral was gutted, and every priest and teacher became a criminal in his own community. The standing population of the slave labor camps soon reached an excess of 15 million. It is a long, grisly story, but in summation, some 20 million of the white Russian leadership class were butchered and murdered in accordance with the directives of the Jewish Talmud. Today, Russia is a zombie-like proletariat slave state under the heel of the Jewish dictators. The population is docile, hungry, willing to work, easily controlled, without leadership and completely incapable of revolt. The Jewish ritual of murder goes on, and some 20 million more of these pitiable slaves are the inmates of bestial internment camps, tortured and goaded by their Jewish slave masters. Bela Kun in Hungary. The Jew Bela Kun, whose real name was Cohen, had participated in the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. Following the armistice, he and a group of Jewish revolutionaries, using forged passports, moved into Hungary, well supplied with finances by the Soviet government and aided by the pro-communist resident Jewish population. Bela Kun soon became the dictator of all Hungary. Bela Kun's program was to arm at once and forcibly transfer every industry and all landed property, without reservation, into the hands of the proletariat. He nationalized all banks, all concerns with over 200 employees, all landed property over 1,000 acres, every building other than workmen's dwellings, all jewelry, all private property above the minimum, which consisted of 2 suites, 4 shirts, 2 pairs of boots, and 4 socks, was seized. The result of this program was, as in Russia, economic and social chaos. The land, buildings and industries of a nation cannot be nationalized overnight without creating havoc. Therefore, as in Russia, such a program could only be enforced by resorting to the Red Terror. The communization of the country's industrial and agricultural resources produced a famine in the cities, and this, combined with the peasants' hatred for the Jews, resulted in Kun's eventual overthrow. Nevertheless, during this 3-month reign of terror, tens of thousands of people, priests, army officers, merchants, landowners, and professional people were butchered with a sadistic frenzy that was characteristic of Bela Kun and his band of Jewish cutthroats. It is interesting to note that it was the peasants on the farms who had little education but had enough instinct to realize that the culprits were the Jews, who took the appropriate measures to revolt against them and bring them to heel. The Civil War. One of the most destructive atrocities that the Jews inflict upon the young American Republic was the perpetrating of the War Between the States, raging between 1861 and 1865. The cause of that fratricidal war was neither the issue of slavery, nor was it the desire of the Southern states to secede. It was something altogether different. Something our history books have never mentioned. Between the decades of 1820 and 1860, due to climate, soil, the cotton economy, and other factors, a tremendous economic expansion was taking place in the southern states. Led by the plantation owners, a significant new aristocracy of landowners and millionaires was evolving at a healthy growth in this area. Along with this tremendous expansion, a genuine American tradition, a way of life, was being established. It embodied all the best aspects of the classical civilizations of Rome and Greece, and in fact, much of the architecture was fashioned after the classical era. Many of the cities such as Athens, Rome, Atlanta, Augusta, Alexandria, and others were named after their counterparts in classical ancient history. A fine new culture was developing, the best of its kind in the New World. With it, a large new group of millionaires was suddenly being created. Even a small city like Natchez, Mississippi, had more millionaires than any other city in the United States, except for New York and a few others. A similar situation existed in Atlanta, Richmond, New Orleans, and in general, spread over most of the southern states. They were, in fact, extremely prosperous. At the bottom of most of the newly created millionaires was the cotton economy. The most significant fact about these newly rich millionaires was that they were mostly all Anglo-Saxon. It took a spirit of brash adventure, a tremendous amount of energy and work to blaze new trails in the virgin lands and build a large and profitable cotton plantation. This the white man did with a zeal. It was the white man at his best. In this the Jew did not participate, since pioneering and blazing in wilderness is not his stock in trade. With the tremendous amount of new wealth that was created by the white Anglo-Saxons of the South, also came financial power and political power that foreboded a serious threat to the Jewish financial power of the Eastern Seaboard. And herein lies the real cause of the Civil War. The Jew foresaw in the new white Anglo-Saxon aristocracy of the South a serious potential threat to his financial and political stranglehold, not only over America, but over England and the rest of the world as well. The Jew determined that this power must not only be broken, but it must be demolished. The best way to do it, as usual, was to divide up the white race into two factions, invent some idiotic, spurious issue, incite them to war, and have them slaughter each other. This the Jew did with a fury unmatched in American history. Whereas neither the whites of the North nor of the South really cared a whit about the black man as such, nevertheless, through clever manipulation of propaganda and the levers of government, a war that the Jews had planned for years was actually brought about. It was a ghastly, vicious, and cruel war. On the Union side, the men killed in battle, dying from wounds, disease, and from other causes added up to a total of 359,528 dead. The Union side also had another 281,881 wounded and maimed. On the Confederate side, a total of over 259,000 were killed, and the number wounded was never even recorded. Altogether, this amounted to almost 1 million casualties in a young nation that in the 60s had a population of only approximately 32 million. This is a ghastly toll, but it only tells part of the story. While the flower of America's young manhood was being slaughtered and maimed, the Jews were financing both the North and the South with huge loans. The House of Rothschild, then, as now, the aristocrats of worldwide Jewish banking, had their agents strongly implanted in both the governments of the North and of the South. In the North they had their man, August Belmont, a Jew who, in league with Samuel B. Chase, the Secretary of the Treasury, was in charge of the Rothschild interests. In the South, the Rothschilds had Judah P. Benjamin, a Jew and a relative of the Rothschild family, as Secretary of the Treasury for the Confederacy. Abraham Lincoln tried to bypass the Jewish bankers and issued $346 million of interest-free national currency called greenbacks. This the Jewish banking houses viewed with great alarm. They knew that should this become an established precedent, that the government could furnish its own money without interest, this would be followed by other countries and they would be out of business. They brought to bear all their tremendous power to have this stopped, and for this reason, they had Lincoln assassinated by another Jew, whose family name was not Booth, but Botha. The end of the Civil War was by no means the end of this horrible exercise in self-destruction. The Jews were determined to smash the South once and for all, and they went about it with a vengeance. Even before the war was over, but the South was already defeated, they engaged in a wanton program of destruction that had absolutely no necessity in military strategy whatsoever. They had Sherman cut a swathe 60 miles wide from Atlanta to the sea, the heart of the wealth of the Southern Confederacy, and burn, pillage and demolish every piece of physical asset that the white man had built over the years. From there, the destroyers turned north into South Carolina and continued to cut a broad swathe of destruction, terror, and wanton annihilation. When the war was over, the destruction was pursued with an intensified fury. The South's commerce and financial structure had been utterly demolished. Northern carpetbagger Jews came in and bought up properties and plantations that were worth hundreds of thousands before the war. Now, due to the bankruptcy of the Southern economy, could now be bought up in many cases for a couple of $100s. Just as in Germany after World War I. When the Jews had brought that country to its knees in bankruptcy, the Jews now swarmed into the South, and for a few cents on the dollar, they bought up all the valuable properties that were formerly owned by the Anglo-Saxon white man. Nor was this the end of their diabolical program of destruction. With Union Army bayonets to back them up, they were now determined to not only make the newly liberated nigger the equal of the white Southerner, but they were determined to make him his overlord. The white male population was completely disenfranchised. Women still couldn't vote in any case, under the excuse that it had been in rebellion to the American government. Under the leadership of carpetbagger Jews, the niggers were now the only ones who had the right to vote, and they became legislators, senators, governors, judges, and in short, were the Jews' stooges for political power in the South. White women were molested and attacked by the newly released savage mob of the black animals. And the white man had absolutely no governmental protection whatsoever. The Jew, then as now, launched a massive drive to promote the mongrelization of the races in the former Confederate states. It was through the heroic efforts of the white man organizing through the newly formed Ku Klux Klan that he finally regained freedom and political power again. One of the most shameful and miserable periods in the history of America was endured by the South during its so-called Reconstruction days, a period that was not really so much devoted to Reconstruction as it was to looting the white population and consolidating the power of the Jews in an area that had previously been dominated by the creative and prosperous white man. It took some states 15 to 20 years to again free themselves from under the heel of the Jewish tyranny. When they finally did drive the niggers from power and gained control of their own legislators again, the South was still a broken and impoverished area. Even today, after 100 years, the South has never regained the financial or political position that it had previous to the Civil War. Even today, the South, still being the stronghold of white resistance against mongrelization, is the hated target of the Jewish conspiracy. It is against the South that the Jews are directing their most vicious programs of school busing and the most persistent attacks against the white man himself. Jewish use of wars to further consolidate their power. We have seen from the above short summary of the Civil War how the Jews use wars to smash their enemies, to consolidate their financial and political power. There is nothing new about this in the long, treacherous history of the Jews. They have done this from time immemorial, and it behooves us to analyze just how powerful tool-instigated wars are in the hands of the Jews. Some of the goals they achieve through instigating wars are as follows. A. They induce the white man to commit fratricide, brother killing brother, thereby decimating and weakening the white race as a whole. B. In wars like Korea and Vietnam, they use the colored races to kill the white man, but the results are the same. Namely, the best of the young white population is killed, crippled, and maimed. C. Through war, the Jews smash a potential stronghold of the white race such as, for example, the threat the southern aristocracy posed to the power of the Jews, or as, for instance, the growing, thriving German nation posed to the Jews before World War I and World War II. Today, the strength of the United States as a whole is a threat to the Jews, and their total worldwide efforts are now bent towards smashing the United States, the foremost stronghold of the white race. D. By impoverishing both sides of the warring nations or factions, and lending money to them, the Jews thereby, usually, when the war is over, have both sides ensnared in financial bondage, a miserable situation from which the victims are then unable to extricate themselves for decades. E. Not only are the Jews involved in financing the wars and reaping tremendous profits thereby, but usually they have in control their own agents in government that are doling out tremendously lucrative war contracts that enriches new hordes of Jews. When the war is over, the consolidation of their financial power and their stranglehold over the economy of the victim nations is greatly enhanced. F. Without exception, wars incite and inflame hatreds between factions of the white race that will persist for generations in many instances. The Civil War is a good example. The Jews see to it that these hatreds are kept alive and are often used to instigate a second war of the same type, a generation later. G. Wars are always accompanied by a breakdown of moral standards, and are very useful in the Jewish program of destroying the morals and established traditions of the white man. H. By sending our young American boys all over the world to foreign colored countries like Japan, Korea, and Vietnam, many of them come back with colored wives. This is directly in line with the Jewish program of mongrelizing the white race. In general, every war that the Jews push the white race into, the white race emerges weaker financially, morally, politically, and genetically. The Jews always emerges stronger financially, politically, and has dramatically advanced his program of destroying, mongrelizing, and enslaving the white race. Other Jewish atrocities. I would like to list many more of their vicious atrocities that have been perpetrated on the white man over the last several thousand years, but I cannot take the space. I would like to mention the 30 Years' War in Germany from 1618 to 1648, during which 5/5 of all the property was destroyed and 1/3 of all the people killed. This was purely instigated by the Jews over the idiotic issue of religion. I would like to mention the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre in France, when 50,000 Protestants were murdered. I would like to mention the Operation Keelhaul, in which white traitor Eisenhower collaborated with the Russian Jews and Stalin to extradite 2 to 3 million nationals from all countries who had fought on the Allied side. They were forcibly rounded up and shipped back to Russia, where Stalin then wreaked vengeance upon them by either executing them or sending them to their death in Siberia. I could cite innumerable other instances of Jewish atrocities perpetrated upon the white race, but we just do not have the space. So in summation, just let me say that the atrocities are boundless and endless. They are going on today as relentlessly as ever in the diabolical Jewish program aimed at the destruction of the white race. There is one last atrocity, however, that I must bring to the attention of my white racial comrades. One of the most sinister atrocities of all time is being perpetrated upon white America today, yet very few people know it is going on. I am referring to the diabolical Jewish program of mongrelizing the white race here in America. This fiendish program is being pursued relentlessly and furiously with every ounce of energy and with every weapon at their command. Yet the majority of the white people of America are completely asleep and befuddled on this issue. Very few are aware that this is the real Jewish objective of all their civil rights gibberish. Let us make no mistake about it. It is their real objective. It is the unswerving goal of world Jewry to make America a mongrel brown, and in fact phase out the magnificent white race from the face of this planet. This is without a doubt the most damaging, the most permanent, and the most fiendish catastrophe that the Jews could possibly perpetrate on nature's crowning glory, the noble white race. If all buildings were smashed, as in Germany, and our highways and railways were wrecked, we would suffer a severe blow, but we could rebuild them, as have the Germans. If our cities were destroyed, as the niggers and Jews have done in the heart of some of our great cities in America today, we can and will erect newer and better ones. We can and will erect newer and better ones. We could be defeated in war. We could suffer every other kind of catastrophe, but we could raise new sons who would redeem our power. But let us never forget that if the blood of our white race should become mingled and mongrelized with the black blood of Africa, then the white race has, for all purposes, been destroyed forever, and all hope for the future would be forever gone. We would be much better off dead than have the magnificent, noble white race corrupted into an abysmal brown scum to be enslaved by the Jews. It is the avowed aim of this book and our new religion to awaken the white people of America and of the world. It is our goal to organize them, to give them a fighting creed, and for us to again regain absolute and unconditional control of our manifest destiny.